great to see you this morning, Crosspoint. My word, on this beautiful Sunday morning. And if you're here for the first time, if you're a guest with us this morning, welcome. My name's Kurt, if we haven't had a chance to meet. And we are beginning this brand new series called Unmasked, Revealing God's Heart for the Human Race. And this has been something that's kind of been growing on our hearts really over the last number of years, and we've kind of hit on it a few times here and there, but we just have this burden for the growing tensions that we see in our world when it comes to race and racism and hatred and all of the things associated with that. In fact, a few weeks ago, about 4 weeks ago, we were in the midst of a series called At the Movies 7, and we look at some of the big movies that hit the big screen, you know, throughout the year and the fibers of faith that run through them. And we looked at one of my favorite movies from the last year, the movie Green Book, because it really kind of personifies this tension and it shows this relationship between a black man and a white man, and how once they come together and really begin a friendship, they begin to understand each other at a different level, and there's some reconciliation that begins to happen. Many of you watched the movie as a result of us talking about it. You've loved it. I highly recommend it if you have not seen it. And so on that particular weekend, I had a number of conversations with people. You know, some people, you know, just said something along the lines of, man, we're really excited that we chose to, you know, dive into this. I'm glad my church is taking this seriously. Other people said, man, I'm just looking forward to what God has to say about this whole issue, because we hear so many, you know, pieces and sound bites in our world. I had a conversation after our Thursday night service with one of our sound techs, and he said, Kurt, when I was here at rehearsal last night, the night before, he said, I saw our topic for the weekend. I was really excited we were going to be approaching this. And then I thought, oh my gosh, I hope I like our church after I hear where we stand on this. And I said, okay, well, what do you mean by that? And he said, I think I know where Crosspoint is on this, but I just hope I still like my church afterwards. And I said, well, that's a reasonable thing, because, I just believe as Christians, one of our roles, for those of us that call ourselves followers of Jesus, is to be a difference maker on this front. But if I'm really honest, I think Christians are some of the most polarizing people on the issue of racism in our country. Not necessarily here, but throughout our world and throughout our country. And so, you know, we just felt like it was kind of important to dive into this. So I looked at him after service. We'd gone through Thursday night service. I said, so how did we do? He said, oh, good, good. I love my church. I'm like, good. He said, that's exactly where I thought we would land. And it just kind of revealed to me that this is a topic that we need to spend some time on together. And so as your pastor, as your spiritual coach, if you will, I want to walk us through this morning God's heart for the human race. I want to take a look at some of, you know, my best learnings and understandings and really core convictions on how we understand God's heart toward humanity. And whether you're here every week or you're new today or you're newer to Crosspoint, it's important that we all know kind of where we stand here at Crosspoint. So really three things I want to do today. One, I want to look at what God says about racism and what our response to that is. I want us to look at, you know, kind of where our posture is at Crosspoint, what the kind of community we want to be in, how we walk that out. And then we're just going to give some real practical, walkouts, things you can actually do this week. And so let's start. What does God say about the human race, about racism? Four things I want to give you this morning on why God hates racial prejudice. And you might screenshot these, write them down. I want you to take these with you this morning. All right, so number one, racial prejudice questions God's creation. Racial prejudice questions God's creation. See, race matters, and the reason it matters is because it matters to God. In fact, God could have created all of us the same. He could have cloned us. He could have made everybody just like you, but guess what? He didn't. He didn't. He loves diversity. He loves variety. In fact, the idea of multiple races was actually his idea. And so whenever somebody says, well, I mean, you know, race doesn't really matter that much, what you're saying is that God's creation doesn't matter. Or when someone exhibits prejudice toward a particular race in our world, what you're saying is, God, you kind of screwed up. You kind of messed up right there. I mean, you know, because you created so many different people. And you should have just, like, created everybody like, let's be honest, like me, right? I mean, when we hear those racial comments, that's really what they're saying. And do you hear the pride in that? You should have created everybody like me? I mean, the narcissism in the midst of that, the conceit in that statement that everybody should be just like me. Take a look at what Luke, one of the gospel writers, says in Acts chapter 17. He said, God began by making one man, and so that one man is Adam. Everything originates with Adam and Eve. God began by making one man. From him came all the different people who live everywhere in the world. He decided exactly when and where they must live. And so this says that, you know, you didn't choose your race. In fact, we didn't choose when we were going to be born, what parents we were going to be born to, you know, what city, state, or zip code, or country we were going to be born into. God totally decided all that for us. In fact, God doesn't want you to be anybody else. He wants you to be you. He wants me to be me. And anytime we're trying to be something else, you know, that just kind of grieves God's heart. I mean, if he wanted you to be somebody else, he would have made you that way. It kind of makes me chuckle every time I hear somebody say something like, "Well, I'm from the South," or I'm from like New York, or I'm from, you know, Midwest or Indiana. I'm like, you know, it's almost like we're prideful sometimes. Like, I was born in, you know, California. Okay, that's cool, but like, why do we get so proud about that? Like, you didn't decide that, right? I mean, God totally decided where you were going to be born. We didn't have any choice in it. Take a look at the Apostle Paul in 1 Corinthians chapter 4. Now, Paul, if you're not familiar with Paul is somebody who used to have a lot of hatred toward a lot of people groups, one of them being Christians. So he understands what it's like to kind of hate certain people groups. So here's what Paul says later in his life after he's kind of begin to see things differently. He says, "Who says that you're better than others?" I mean, okay, let's be honest. You might go in the back of your mind. You might feel at times like you're better than others, right? I mean, you're not going to tell anybody about it because that would make you look really bad, but you might think that. He says, "Who says you're better than others, and what do you have that was not given to you by God?" In other words, if it was all a gift, everything we have was given by God as a gift, it was by God's grace, if it was given to you, then why do you brag if you did not receive it as a gift? See, ultimately, what matters is not what race we're from or where we were born or what part of the world or ethnicity we're from. What matters is that we're all a part of the human family. We're all a part of the human race. And what unites us is that God has breathed his image into you. That every single created person, every person whose heart is beating on this planet right now, you are a divine image bearer. And you may have been told by your parents, "Oh, you were a mistake. We didn't plan on you." Guess what? You were not a mistake to God. That the moment that your life came into being and he breathed his breath into you, you became a divine image bearer of your heavenly Father, regardless of color, regardless of race. And so whenever we exhibit any kind of prejudice, it just questions God's creation. Second thing, racial prejudice is a sign of ignorance. It's a sign of ignorance. You know, anytime I make a prejudgment about someone, all right, it really shows that I don't know what I'm talking about. All right, and it reveals foolishness. And it's one of those things that it just kind of shows that I don't really understand God's heart for the world. I really don't understand God's plan. I don't even understand God's people. And you know, when you don't know something about a people group, you tend to kind of be down on that people group, right? Whatever you're not up on, you're down on. And so, you know, the more ignorant I am, The more down on someone that I am, and the more prejudiced I will be. In fact, here's what John says in 1 John 2, verse 11. He says, "Anyone who hates a brother or sister is in the darkness. They walk around in the darkness. They don't know where they're going, and the darkness has made them blind." And so what John is saying here is anytime I'm hating someone, or anytime I'm down on someone, like, "Oh, they're different than me. I don't like them. You know, I hate them." John says, you don't know what you're doing. You're walking around like it's like you're blind, and you don't know where you're going, and everybody can see it. Now, the opposite is true as well. While prejudice is a sign of ignorance, the wiser you are, the more wisdom that you have, the more unprejudiced that you're going to be. Right, it's actually a mark of wisdom. This is one of the reasons we're talking about it today, because I want you to live wisely, not as a fool. All right? James, he tells us the definition of true wisdom. Now, this is James in the New Testament. James is the literal biological brother of Jesus. All right? He kind of came into the game late. Wasn't originally, kind of didn't really believe his brother was who he said he was. And after he saw him die and get resurrected and kind of walk around again, he's like, "Oh my gosh, I think I believe he is who he says he is." So this is James, Jesus' brother. And before I read this, let me just kind of delineate the difference between wisdom and knowledge. See, you can be very, very knowledgeable and not have wisdom. All right, so like you can be a professor. I mean, you can kind of have all kinds of letters behind your name. You can be like unwise. All right, so here's what James says. He says, "True wisdom is from above, And so what he's saying is true wisdom actually comes from God. Like, you can walk around and you can read as much Wikipedia or Encyclopedia Britannica as you want, all right? I had a cousin when we were growing up. All he did was read Encyclopedia Britannica. That's all he did. We're playing football. He's reading the encyclopedia or watching the grandfather clock. I don't know what it was with grandfather clocks. But he was incredibly knowledgeable. He's a brilliant. He has all kinds of knowledge. It doesn't make you wise. James says true wisdom is from above. And then notice he gives us some descriptors. He says true wisdom is pure. True wisdom is peaceful. Listen, if I'm not being peaceful, if I'm inciting some kind of aggravation in people, I'm not being wise. That's what James is saying right here. He's saying I'm being foolish. Anytime I'm creating conflict, you know, whether it's at home or in the workplace or, you know, with a certain people group, you know, whether it's through my comments or social media, whatever it is, James says, man, that's not wise. You're not being wise. You're being a fool. James says wisdom is gentle. So anytime I'm gentle, I'm wise. When I'm rough or when I'm a bully or when I use the weight of who I am to try to get something done. James says, that's not wise. That's, you're actually being foolish when you do that. James says, wisdom is friendly. So when you're friendly, it's a wise thing to do. When you're unfriendly, it's foolish because wisdom is wise, is friendly. Wisdom is full of compassion. So the more compassionate you are, the wiser you're going to be. When you're hard on people, when you're just, you just never give them a break, he says, that's foolish. Don't do that. And then last, he says, wisdom is free from prejudice and hypocrisy. Now, notice the difference, again, between wisdom and knowledge. All right, knowledge shows up on a test. All right, you can get straight A's in high school, straight A's in college. That's knowledge. How many of you are straight A students and you're willing to admit it? All right, I was not a straight A student, was a straight B student. I was a straight C, C minus student, 2.5 GPA. Because I was wise. I knew there was a lot of fun between an A and a C. And so that's the track I was on. All right, and so, but knowledge shows up on a test. All right, knowledge shows up, you know, on your transcripts. Wisdom, on the other hand, you know where it shows up? It shows up in your relationships. If you want to know how wise you are, look at your relationships. These words, peaceful, gentle, you know, friendly, full of compassion. Those are all relational words, all right? And so, listen, you could have a PhD. You could have be like, consider like Dr. Celsius, right? You have so many degrees behind your name. They're like, Dr. Celsius, that's who we're going to call you. And you could still be, if your relationships suck, like you're blowing it, all right? You're not wise. So if you want to know how wise you are, don't look at your knowledge. Don't look at your transcripts or your, you know, letters behind your name. Look at your relationships. Are you being gentle and compassionate and friendly and peaceful? Because James says, you know, this is what it looks like to be wise. God wants you to be wise. When we're prejudiced, when we prejudge, we're actually being foolish. Third thing, racial prejudice is diametrically opposed to the great commandment of Jesus. You might say, well, what's the great commandment? Well, you've probably heard it before. One day Jesus was, you know, out in the community. A guy was walking along. He said to Jesus, hey, what's the most important thing? Jesus, you claim to be a teacher. You claim to be close to God. Of all the scriptures that are written, what's the most important thing? Like, if you could boil it down to one thing, the number one thing, what would it be? And Jesus says, oh, that's easy. I can give it to you in 3 seconds. He's like, 3 seconds, really? He's like, yep, love the Lord your God with all your heart and love your neighbor as yourself. The guy goes, that's it? Jesus says, that's it. He's like, if you want the Bible, like the super extreme Cliff Notes version of the Bible, love the Lord your God with all your heart, love your neighbor as yourself. Now that phrase, love your neighbor as yourself, is repeated over and over throughout the New Testament. In fact, 8 times it's repeated. In fact, we see the Apostle Paul use it later on in the book of Galatians chapter 5. And he gives us a warning with it. In fact, here's what Paul says. He says, the entire law, kind of affirming what Jesus said, the entire law is summed up in this one command, love your neighbor as yourself, but, and then he gives us the warning right here. And here's a little cue. Whenever you're reading this, you know, from Paul or Peter or James or any of these guys or Jesus, whenever there's a but, like that means pay attention. Listen up. There's something important coming after it. He says, but if instead of showing love, you attack and tear each other apart, watch out. You will destroy yourselves. Can I just say that I think this is what's happening in our world right now, in our culture, in our country? We're destroying ourselves. I mean, we don't need any external terrorists. I mean, we've got it going on right here within ourselves because we're not loving our neighbors. We forgot what it means to love our neighbors as ourselves. Now, it's interesting because when Jesus said this, you know, most important thing is love, you know, Lord your God with all your heart and your neighbor as yourself. The Pharisees, they're the religious leaders, they're always looking for a loophole. always looking for a way to kind of get out of whatever it is Jesus is talking about. Just like you and I, let's be honest, you and I, we're looking for loopholes all the time, right? We're somewhat pharisaical. And so the Pharisees, one of them comes and says, well, Jesus, who's my neighbor? I mean, let's be honest, who's my neighbor? Because he's hoping that it doesn't mean everybody. And so Jesus answers him with this really famous story. You've probably heard about it before. And he basically answers the question, who's my neighbor? It's the story of the Good Samaritan. And he basically tells this story about a man who's traveling through a region. And while he's traveling, he sees a man who's basically been beaten up and left for dead in the ditch. He's bleeding. He's been mauled. He's at the end of his life virtually. And this man goes and begins to care for him. He nurses his his wounds and dresses his wounds. And he takes him to an inn. And he says to the innkeeper, "Hey, will you continue to nurse him back to health? And when I come back through, I will pay you for whatever expenses you incur for caring for him." And so here's the crazy thing. This man doesn't know the guy he's helping from Adam. He doesn't know him at all. And the even more interesting thing is in those days, the Samaritan, the hero in the story, is known as the kind of the hated minority in that particular time frame of the world. And so Jesus, when he's asked the question, who's my neighbor? And he makes this story up, this parable up about here's what your neighbor looks like. He makes the hero of the story the most despised minority, the hated minority in the world at that time. And he says, this is what it means to be a neighbor. Which, by the way, I just want to tell you, I've been working ahead on the reboot journey because I usually work a week or two ahead, and I've been going through some of the challenges this week as we've been getting these ready, and every week in your small group experience during reboot, you're going to get a particular challenge, and it's going to vary from person to person, that you're going to go out and like implement that week if you're up for the challenge, like should you accept the mission kind of thing. And so, and I'm telling you what, these things are cool. I'm looking through these things going, oh my gosh, this is going to turn my world upside down, specifically as it comes to loving people not like me. And so, man, get in a group because that's where you're going to get the challenges, all right? Now, Jesus, he says, who do you, he looks at the Pharisees, he says, who do you think your neighbor is? And the Pharisees have to admit, they're like, well, I mean, I guess it's anybody who shows love to us. And Jesus goes, ding, 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 ding. Everybody's your neighbor. And you need to love everybody as you'd want to be loved. And so when we don't get this right, when we're prejudiced towards someone, or we feel like there's somebody who's a little lesser than ourselves, listen, you are diametrically opposed to the greatest commandment of Jesus and the whole story that he's writing in the world. And then number four, racial prejudice is a serious sin. I mean, it's a serious sin. All right, it's not one of those little sins that God's like, you know, wink, wink, you know you're not doing exactly what I've, you know, asked you to do, but it's not that big a deal, which I don't know that God ever really says that. I think we think God says that, like we rate the sins. But this one really makes God mad. I mean, this one, it, for the reasons we've already talked about. In fact, here again is how James, you know, kind of sums this up in James chapter 2:9. He says, if you treat people according to their outward appearance, meaning the way they look, the color of their skin, the way they talk, the region of the world or country that they're from, the way they act, if you treat people according to their outward appearance, you are guilty of sin. What's sin? Sin is missing the mark, missing the bullseye. He says, you are guilty of sin, and God's law condemns you as a lawbreaker. He says, you're a lawbreaker. Because this makes God mad. Why does it make God so mad? Well, the best way I've come to understand this is in my role as a father. See, with my children, you know, every now and then, I mean, we set parameters for our kids, you know, and every now and then they'll step outside of those parameters and they'll do something outside what we've asked them. They do it pretty frequently. And the reason the parameters are there aren't because I just want to be a rule driver. Right? I just want them to follow the rules. It's because I know when they, you know, live within the guardrails that their life is going to be better and they're not going to experience as much pain. But every now and then they step outside of the guardrails and they have to experience kind of the pain that they kind of brought into their own life. And I hate that. It grieves my heart as a father. And see, our Heavenly Father is the same with us. He gives us these things to live by, these instructions as a way to say, hey, when you live within the guardrails, life is so much better. And so many times, we're the ones that step outside the guardrails and we bring pain into our lives. But see, this one, and that's called sin. It's just missing the mark. This one, though, this is where someone else outside of ourselves brings pain into our lives. And so as a dad, I mean, I tell you what, you know, you treat my kids badly because of some exterior, you know, characteristic, whether it's the color of their skin or something they're wearing or, you know, or just where they're from or the part of the country they're from, whatever it might be. I tell you what, you're gonna get the ire of this dad. I mean, you're gonna get my anger. Well, the same is true with God. See, whenever we're prejudiced towards someone, like, that's his child too. And it's like he says, hey, you're my child. But guess what? They are too. And it makes me mad when you treat my children this way. This is one of the reasons, I think, that when we see these heartwarming stories, you know, hit kind of the viral, you know, internet, it just warms our hearts, right? Like, did you guys see the Maxwell and Finnegan story this week, the little two-year-olds who, you know, hadn't seen each other for a couple days? If you didn't, take a look at this. It's phenomenal. Cool is that, right? Do you guys know the backstory on that? They're both like 20, you know, 2.5 years old. They're best friends, apparently, hadn't seen each other in 2 days. And so that's how they had to greet each other. How cool is that? You know, Jesus said it, little children, guess what? They will lead us. He says, if you want to experience the kingdom of heaven, you need to take on the posture of a child. I mean, that right there, that's what God is looking for. And let me say something else about this. You know, seeing people as God sees them doesn't mean you're colorblind, all right? I mean, it doesn't mean that at all. I mean, I've heard people say, well, I mean, when I see people, I don't see their race. I'm like, really? I got a word for that. You know what it is? Liar. That's what that is. You got to see their race. God doesn't want you to ignore that. You know, God's heart is that you would be color blessed, not color blind. I mean, God paints in color. Look, did you see the sunrise last night? Or this morning, the sunset last night, sunrise this morning was beautiful too. I just sat on my patio this morning and was watching the sunrise. Last night I was going to take my son somewhere. I said, hey, look in the mirror. It's beautiful behind you. God paints in color. The flowers, the trees here over the next few months. God loves color, right? He doesn't want us to ignore that. He wants us to celebrate that. See, God just wants us to see people the way he sees them, and he wants us to have as big a heart for the world that he created as he does. And so that's why, you know, here at Crosspoint, I mean, you know, it's important for you to know, we reject all racism, all bigotry, all white supremacy, anything that goes with that. I mean, if you're newer to Crosspoint, or even if you've been around here for a while and you're just not sure, you know, or if you're around here and you think, man, racism and bigotry in certain cases is okay, let me just tell you, you're not going to like this church. You're not going to like it at all. There's really three reasons you're not going to like this church. Number one, you're going to have an issue with me as the pastor, all right? Because, see, I'm going to do my best to give you God's heart for whatever issues we're talking about. And there may be times where you know, people are like, you stepped on my toes. I'm like, good. All right, we're an equal opportunity offender. We're going to offend all of us at one point or another. I'm not just going to say what you may want me to say. All right, so you're going to have an issue with me if you think racism and bigotry are okay every now and then. All right, secondly, you're going to have an issue with God, right? I mean, God, he's like, who are you to judge other people? All right, who are you to think that, like, you're more important than somebody else? I mean, if you think that, like, you're more important than anybody else that's breathing on the face of this earth, you got a rude awakening coming, because God's like, no. I mean, you're certainly not less important than anybody else on this earth, but I can guarantee you're not more important, because God's grace is unconditional and love is unconditional for everyone. So you're going to have an issue with God. You're going to have a problem with God. And then third, the reason you're not going to like this church is because our partners and regulars and people who, you know, start, you know, hanging around being like, man, I like this place. Guess what? We like each other around here. Do we not like each other? All right, there we go. Yeah, you guys are still waking up. We like each other around here. We just have this belief that church is for everybody. And it doesn't matter who you are, where you're from. We get really excited when new people come. It happens every single weekend. We have this phrase around here, cross points for everybody, regardless of sex, age, race, gender, spiritual background, spiritual orientation, sexual orientation, gender identity, race, all of it. We just feel like church is for everybody. And this isn't anything new. Now, even though we believe church is for everybody, that doesn't mean everybody likes Crosspoint, right? I mean, there's some like super high religious types who don't appreciate what Crosspoint's about. But Crosspoint's here for everybody. In fact, from the very beginning, this has been our DNA. In fact, I want to take you back as we close to the very beginning, where Crosspoint began, because this isn't something that's changed for us. When we first started Crosspoint, before we have ever had a service on a weekend across the street at Fall Creek Intermediate School, we had small groups. We had one small group, and it multiplied to two, eventually to five, over about a three-month period of time before we opened our doors publicly for services. And every time we'd start a new group, we would read a picture of this first century church community that began back in the first century in Acts chapter 2. And we would just ask the question, hey, do you feel like this is still relevant today? And this set the DNA for who Crosspoint began. And so the first group of 10 or 12 of my closest friends who chose to join us in the journey to start Crosspoint, we read this and asked that question. And about a month later, that group had grown to about 16, and we multiplied and started two groups. And in each of those groups, we read it again as we continue to have new people come in. And then we went to three and four groups. And we'd read this picture. And I just want to read it for you this morning. And this is a paraphrase of Acts 2 from a guy by the name of Dr. Gilbert Bilzekian. And he put some color into the language so we can understand the dynamic nature of what was taking place in that first century church. So there was once a community of believers who were so totally devoted to God that their life together was charged with the Spirit's power. In that band of Christ followers, believers loved each other with a radical kind of love. They took off their masks, hence our series title, Unmasked. They were unmasked. They took off their masks and they shared their lives with one another. They laughed and cried and prayed and sang and served together in authentic Christian fellowship. That's small group community right there. That's why we're so big on small groups, because that's where those things happen. Those who had more shared freely with those who had less until socioeconomic barriers melted away. People related to get together in ways that bridge gender and racial chasms, and get this, celebrated cultural diversity, cultural differences. It's been that way here since day one. This community of believers, this church, offered unbelievers a vision of life that was so beautiful that it took their breath away. It was so bold, so creative, so dynamic, that they couldn't resist it, and the Lord added to their number daily those who were being saved. Wow. I want to ask you the same question that we would ask in those first communities, first small groups. Do you believe this is still possible today? Because we do. And do you believe that this is still needed today? We're closing the chasm and racial chasms in our world. The socioeconomic chasms are being closed. Because see, we do. Which means that if we're serious about following Jesus, we've got to continue to be serious about building bridges, not walls. We've got to build bridges to close the socioeconomic chasms. We've got to be building bridges to close the gender chasms. We've got to be building bridges to close the racial chasms. It's the only way that it'll happen in the world. Like Jesus said, blessed are the peacemakers. Our mission here is to help people find their way to God. You know what that looks like? That means that when I close chasms between your life and mine and I love you like I want to be loved, guess what? Jesus walks across that bridge from my life into your life. That's how that works. In fact, one of the most pivotal moments in the whole civil rights movement of the 1960s was March 7th, 1965. And you may have read about it. Maybe you were alive. It was just before I was born into this world. But I've read about it. I've studied it. It was the day the march began from Selma to Montgomery. And that day became known as Sunday Bloody Sunday. Because this walk across the bridge by these 550, 600 black African-American men, women, religious leaders, actually was the impetus that started the change in our world, but it wasn't without sacrifice. And so if you're not familiar with that day, I want to show you a short little clip from the movie Selma that kind of depicts the march on that March 7th, 1965. Take a look.
We interrupt this program to bring you a special bulletin from CBS News.
Give him 2 minutes. Stand right there.
We're ready.
This is an unlawful assembly. You have 2 minutes to disperse. Go home or go to your church. This march will not continue.
2 minutes.
May I have a word with the Major?
There's no word to be had.
Major Cloud, may we speak with you?
Were swept to the ground, screaming, arms and legs flying, packs and bags went skittering across the grassy divider.
Man, that never gets easier to watch. And I'm kind of glad that it doesn't, because it shouldn't. You know, one of the greatest obstacles to the civil rights movement that began 50, 60, 70 years ago, one of the greatest obstacles was the apathy and the silence of the American public, the broader American public. And what began on that day, where through these 600 civil rights marchers, began a movement. It began something where 70 million people, as you heard in that scene, actually watched on TV men and women and children and students be inhumanely treated simply because of the color of their skin. And America began to get bothered by it, and it began to get under our skin. And so that walk across the bridge actually got people off the sidelines. People of faith began to step up, spiritual leaders, Christians, people of all faith groups said, you know, this is not right. And it's no longer okay to just kind of stand and watch. And so 2 weeks later, on March 21st, 1965, thousands upon thousands of men and women from every race and every color joined those 600 marchers, and they once again walked across the bridge. And this time there were priests, and there were rabbis, and there were pastors, there were men, women, students, nuns, black, white, and every color in between. And so I want you to take a look at this scene that took place just 2 weeks later.
Now you masters of war, you that build all other guns, you that build the dead plains, you that build the big bombs, just want you to know that I see through your mask. You that never done nothing but build to destroy.
Troopers, withdraw!
See, it was the willingness of men and women, of people who follow Jesus, and their willingness to come together as the human family, as a human race, and cross the bridge with their fellow brothers and sisters that made the difference. It was moms, dads, students, pastors, people of faith, all faiths that came together. And we still need to do this. So what do we do as a result of this today? I want to give you a couple walkouts today. I want to give you a few next steps. They're in the back of your connection card. And we give these to you every week because do we all agree that the hatred and the violence is increasing in our world? I mean, do you see this happening? I mean, is the world getting kinder or is it getting, you know, more and more rude? Just ask yourself that. More and more rude, right? So what can we do? Well, I want to give us some walkouts. You know, for those of us who are followers of Jesus, those of us who are seeking and just trying to discover who Jesus is, trying to follow after God's heart on this, a number of things on the back here. First of all, we got to continue to talk about it. Let me just say, you being here today, man, way to go. If you knew that we were beginning this series on racism in our world and you're like, man, I want to go, I want to be a part of the conversation, kudos to you. Well done on being here. Now, if you didn't know that we were beginning this today and you walked in here thinking we're still at the movies and you were getting free movie tickets, I am sorry. All right. Now, I am going to mail you a gift in the mail this week. Just turn your connection card into the Joy Box. And yeah, you can put these in the boxes as you go, and we'll make sure you get a free gift this week in the mail. But we got to continue the conversation. So the first next step is I'll return next weekend for week two. I just want to encourage you to come back to the conversation. Next week, I'm going to be unpacking this whole idea of privilege. Privilege. We're all privileged. I mean, if you live in this community, if you are really living in the United States, we're privileged. Now, we have different levels of privilege, and the more we understand that, the more we can be reconcilers on this front. So I invite you to come back next weekend as we talk about this. Number two, we have to model what community is all about. I don't know any organization in the world that is greater positioned to do this than the local church. I mean, the church speaks more languages than the United Nations. The church is in more locations worldwide than any business or nonprofit. The church is bigger than any nation. The church is like 2.2 to 2.3 billion people. I mean, it's bigger than India, it's bigger than China. It's nearly as big as India and China put together. Somebody has to show our world what it means and what it looks like to get along. And I just don't think there's any better place to do that than in the local church, in the local ecclesia. And it doesn't happen here, it happens in small group communities. That's why small groups are so important, where we laugh and cry and encourage one another and sing and pray for each other and talk about how we're growing and we see each other for who we are, human beings. And so, you know, man, sign up for a small group today. It's one of our next steps for the journey. We want 100% participation in small groups, not only because we believe it's going to grow you, but we believe this is where real change happens. And see, here's the thing. You can't model love by yourself, right? You can't model reconciliation by yourself. I mean, you can go up in a mountain and live and be like, oh, I'm up here all by myself. I don't have to interact with anybody. There's all kinds of love up here. You can't model love when there's nobody around. And don't do that. You'll become like the Unabomber or something. That's not a good thing, all right? Don't do that. Our world needs to see that the voice of love is louder than the voice of hate. And I just think that the Christians through the local church are the best expression of that happening. And you guys have been doing fantastic at it, by the way. This is more of an encouragement to keep going after it. So get in groups where we can continue to model that. And then last, we need to be intentional as peacemakers. We have to be intentional as peacemakers. Jesus said, blessed are the peacemakers, for they will inherit the kingdom of God. If there's any entity that's to be exhibiting and characterizing this in the world, I believe it's the local ecclesia known as the church. And so I want to ask you, third next step on here this week, I want to ask you, fourth next step, to be intentional about identifying places this week where you can be a bridge builder or you can be a peacemaker. Whenever there's a conversation that might have some racial twinge on it or something that's dishonoring of someone for some external, exterior thing, it honestly just dishonors anyone for any reason, I want you to be a peacemaker and a bridge builder in that situation. In fact, I want to give you a picture before we leave as we kind of close this morning that I hope you will never forget because it was shared with me by one of my mentors. Cool thing is this guy is here today. One of my first pastors, the very first pastor I worked with, Ed Nelson, he's in the room today. His daughter and son-in-law attend Cross Point. And so thank you, Ed, for giving this to me because I've never forgot it. He gave me this image of the role that we play in the world, and I want to show it to you. He said, every day, you walk around with one of two things, actually both things in your hands. you walk around with fuel and you walk around with a cup of water. And in nearly every situation that you encounter, anything that has to do with any kind of tension or conflict, you have the ability to accelerate and fuel that conflict, or you have the ability to douse it. And especially when it comes to racial issues, especially when it comes to, you know, kind of prejudgment, prejudices toward other people. I mean, whenever we hear a comment or somebody makes some comment that degrades another race, I mean, we have the opportunity to fuel that or to dissipate that. Every day, you have this opportunity. So as you go through your week, I want you to look for intentional opportunities. And I want you to ask yourself, because you carry both of these every day. It's not which I carry both. Am I dousing? Am I deflating? Am I being a peacemaker? Am I bringing the cup of cold water to the places that our world needs the most? And you might go, well, I mean, Kurt, I don't know. I'm not a real, proactive person. I don't do really either of those. I just kind of stand on the sideline. Well, then let me give you one more picture to add to this. All right, then you're just like a piece of dead wood. That's what you are. You're like a driftwood. Which is actually fuel. Believe it or not, this is fuel to the fire. So if you're just saying, well, I'm just kind of in the middle, I don't really do either, then you're actually adding fuel. You are bringing fuel to the fire that is smoldering. And so this week, Crosspoint, I want us to bring a cup of cold water. I want us to be peacemakers and bridge builders. This is what will continue to change the temperature of this issue in our culture. You've been doing fantastic. Let's continue doing it. Let's stand. I want to pray for us, and we're going to sing one more song together. Heavenly Father, we just thank you for the opportunity to dive into difficult topics. This has been the history of Crosspoint. We're not willing to shy away from them. I'm thankful for this community from the very beginning that's been a place where we can celebrate cultural differences, where we can sit in the same row as somebody who's socioeconomically in an entirely different place than me, sit in the same row as somebody that culturally or racially is an entirely different place from me, and that we can say that is good. And we can see value, and we can know that we are stronger because of that. And so, God, I just pray for this local ecclesia, this local expression of the church known as Crosspoint, God, that we would be people who would be peacemakers and bridge builders. Help us to be attuned this week. Help us to see how we can bring a cup of cold water, how we can deflate situations this week, and that you call us to do that. And that when that happens, God, we build bridges that you walk across, and lives are changed, and perspectives are changed. And the world gets a bit kinder because we're loving people the way we want to be loved. And so just empower us to do this week. God, give us wisdom. Help us operate wisely this week. Help us know what to do with what we've heard today. I pray these things in your name, Jesus. Amen. So we're going to sing one more song. And as the band leads us, this ties us into the change that we believe God is calling to.